What is up, Pod Nation? It's Nate with the Podio Slave Podcast, and I'm here with my homies Tony and Anthony. What are you guys up to today?
Hey, man, feeling good.
Feeling good, feeling great. Podcast Thursday, right? Is today Thursday?
It is Thursday, yeah.
It's Podcast Thursday. Yeah,
I was going to say, we had a great episode tonight. We had an interview, which we always love. Twan, who did we interview tonight?
Yeah, so we had, like Nate said, a fantastic guest. We had Kat Nijmuddin. She is the creative director for Pure Noise Records. So she handles everything from photography to graphic design to illustration to video production, anything in that creative space. She is a true wizard at just meeting her. We feel like we've known her forever. Won't get too much into it. We'll save that for the podcast. I'm excited for everyone to listen to this. So if you like Pure Noise Records, you know, The Terrors of the World, Less Than Jake is now with them, Hawthorne Heights, Chamber, wide variety of artists, and we get into all that with Kat. So without further ado, here is our conversation with Kat Nijmuddin of Pure Noise Records.
If you like what you hear tonight, please go check us out on the social media platforms, Instagram and Twitter, at PodioSlave. Email us at podioslavepodcast@gmail.com, and go back and check out our other interviews. We've had Scott Russo of Unwritten Law. We've had Greg Bergdorf of Zebrahead, Chad Neptune from Further Seems Forever, among many other great guests. You were safe below the moon, weren't you?
All right. We're here with Kat Nijmuddin. Kat, we appreciate you so much coming on the podcast and hanging out with us.
Thank you for having me.
So Kat, I'm not sure how much you've listened to us, but we are probably three like the biggest music nerds that you could encounter. We've been going to shows, fests, collecting vinyl, you name it, for the last 20 plus years, dating back to the 90s. But we're also huge Pure Noise Records fans. We love the label. Love the diversity of the label. We've seen it grow from this like small indie label about a decade ago. And now it's huge, right? It's got a ton of brand name bands. And the diversity, it just works. Like, it's just crazy. Like, we love so many different styles of music. And I don't think there's a label that pulls it off quite like Pure Noise. And I think one of those reasons is the branding. Totally the branding. I think the brand name, the visuals, the identity, all of that. So having you on is, it's a perfect match.
Thank you guys.
So we've said this before to other guests. You don't just wake up one day and, okay, I'm the creative director of Pure Noise. You have a music come up, right? We all started somewhere. We had a favorite band. We went to our first show, that type of thing. What is some of your early, like one of the reasons that you got into being around music and liking being in the scene?
I always kind of bring it back to the story of like from when I was real little, because my dad really loved music. Like, he had a massive CD collection. And when like my brother and I were kids, he would always have these like music appreciation nights where he would just like, we would sit in his room and he would just pick out like a random CD and just be like, oh, this is this band. They're from here. This is how long their career lasted. This is why they broke up. And like, sit there, like just go through the entire album and just listen and appreciate. He wasn't too hyped when I got to like seventh grade and I was like, yeah, Jonas Brothers are my favorite band. but it definitely started from there. I just loved listening to music.
Just out of curiosity, what was there any like specific genre in those CD collection, or was it kind of all over the map? Or
it was mostly like classic rock. So like,
nice.
Billy Joel. My dad's favorite band is Rush.
Nice. Awesome.
So that's like, I think all of us have those like early memories of like, you know, our parents, whether it's cassette tapes or vinyl and whatnot. At what point did it become like, all right, well, that's my parents' band. I've discovered something that I like. Was there a turning point for that?
Definitely middle school when I like got my first iPod.
Nice.
When I was in elementary school, I would get those like knockoff MP3 players that like, you know, barely hold an entire album. And when I got my iPod, I had like a cool older cousin who, My Chemical Romance was her favorite band, and like Senses Fail. And so when she found out that I got an iPod, she just made me a list of bands that I needed to listen to. So it was like The Used, Taking Back Sunday, Under Oath, all of that. And I like deep dove into all of that.
right up our alley. Love TBS, love the Used. Me, I know I've spent a ton of time with them. I remember when that first Used record came out, we were, I want to say, sophomores in high school. And I was like, I haven't heard anything like this on the radio or now in my CD player. And I kind of love it. This is awesome.
Oh, I love the Used.
That's cool. I was thinking, like, when you were saying the iPod thing, like, I had, before I had the iPod, I had like this early version of like an iPod, and it had like, I think 12 songs. It was super cheap, but I was just stoked to be able to like play something without it skipping. You know what I mean? Like a disc Same. Man, like skipped, Same. You know what I mean? And this thing was like, I think $300. It wasn't an iPod, but it was like a knockoff from Radio Shack that my uncle bought me for like a Christmas present. And I was like, this is sick because I can like take this and go mountain biking or something I used to do back when I lived in Maine without any kind of like pause or having to stop and like switch the CD or like, it really comes down to the pause thing. And it just helped me go on adventures and really, like you said, like fully deep dive into the music and embrace the music for what it is rather than like the, you know, the technicalities of trying to listen to the music while in motion. So that's
right. I remember when my parents like got me a CD because my dad used to get, I don't know where it's from, but he used to order CDs from a catalog every month. And I remember as a kid, he would like let me pick a CD. He would let me pick a CD and he'd let my brother pick a CD. And we were allowed to pick out almost anything. He would like go through and like cross out CDs where he's just like, no. Blink 182, Enema of the State, absolutely not. Like, that was a big no.
It's probably like Columbia House or BMG. They had the penny CDs. Like after you did 10, they'd soak you for like $20 a CD or something. They'd get you.
Yeah, and I remember my favorite like mail day as a kid was our CDs came in. I can't wait to put this in my radio.
We recently did a post on our Instagram mail day. Like we still love mail day when the records show up in the mail from Discogs or from any of the various platforms we buy CDs and records and stuff from. So that's just such a great feeling when that comes to the door. You're like, I look outside, sit on the steps, is this 12x12? All right, cool. I know it's here today. This is sweet.
Yeah. I remember when I first started buying vinyl, my mother didn't know what it was. She thought that I was buying calendars. She's like, why do you keep buying calendars? I'm like, I Mom, no.
Want to know what day it is.
That's hilarious. It is like the same dimensions and everything. That's funny. And speaking of vinyl or just like album artwork in general, like was that kind of the beginning of you checking out like graphic design and kind of getting nerdy and checking out like all the artwork and booklets for CDs and both records?
So when I was younger, I taught myself how to draw because I wasn't much of an like outdoorsy kid. I was like, oh, I'm gonna teach myself art because art is cool. So I taught myself how to draw like dragons. I was like, nice. Yeah, this is gonna be my life. And coming back to the Used, Alex Pardee is one of my favorite artists of all time. And I absolutely like love the Used artwork. I love music so much that I just one day was like, I wanna be able to, you know, like walk into Best Buy and like see my CD on the shelf.
So you taught yourself to draw. I assume that was maybe even before you like got into computers and whatnot.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Now, what about the photography side? Because I know you've done a lot with photography, live photos, promo stuff. Like, were you just young with a Polaroid camera, just snapping photos, disposable camera and stuff?
Yeah, my parents had their like little Kodak or whatever. And I thought it was the coolest thing, like, you know, going to Walmart and dropping off the film and then coming back the next day to pick it up. Like, thought it was so cool. They would have like video cameras around too. And I just wanted to play with them. And honestly, I just never stopped playing with them. When I was in high school, I would just take just like portrait photos just around campus because I love documenting things. My parents got me my first actual like digital camera when I was in junior in high school. I had to get a 4.0 one of the semesters, and they were like, we'll get you this camera. And I was like, yes. And I was like, oh, I'm going to be touring. This is going to be great. I get to shoot live music. That dream like soon died down because I was like, my mom's never going to let me tour.
But you got the 4.0, right?
Yeah, I got the good grade.
Exactly.
But I wanted to tour. That was the dream.
Yep.
I honestly started shooting live music 5 years ago now, probably. It scared me a lot because of like the low light. And I was like, I saw these other, you know, photographers on like Tumblr and Twitter. And I was like, oh my God, they're so good. And like, there's no way I could ever come close to anything that they do. So I would just do like portrait stuff. And then my friends were in bands and I was just like, hey, do you mind if I like try shooting the show? All my early photos, bad, but it's okay. Had to start somewhere.
Yeah, you got to practice. I mean, if you go back and listen to episode one of this podcast,
you won't listen again.
It's not nearly as good as I think we're at now. So you just got to practice, got to put those hours in. That's that 10,000 hours, right?
Yeah, you got to have your starting point.
Yeah, we
back then, I was like, yeah, this is the best thing I've ever done. And looking back at it, I was like, why did anybody let me have a camera?
That's so funny. Yeah, we referenced episode one as like our demo tape.
Yeah, just hanging in the basement, recording Skypes and well, let's not edit it. Let's just throw it up. No, we should edit it.
Yeah, exactly. I had a question. I've been on this like kind of, I don't know, every episode kind of update on live music. And it kind of like makes us kind of rewind and go back to like the, you know, beginnings of seeing live music as a younger person or whatever. Like, do you have any like memories you can share? Just like when you first like went to your first show and you realized like, okay, I think I understand what's going on here, especially when it's, you know, being translated from what you just listened to in your headphones.
Yeah. Also, when I was younger, my dad's friends had a band. So we would go see them play. They'd play like random little like outdoor, like family festivals and things. And I loved going to those. And once I, you know, dove into like, I guess like my MySpace scene music, I was like, oh, I want to see all these bands because I'm from Fresno. And when bands come through Fresno, I was like, this is a huge thing. I have to go see them. And my dad was just like, absolutely not. You're not seeing any of these bands. He thought it was like, my dad's first show was Def Leppard.
Nice.
So he kind of thought the crowd would be like that.
Ooh, yeah.
And I kept trying to explain, no, they're like 13 and 14 year olds. Like their parents are probably going to be there or like waiting outside in the car.
Yeah, it's not the same.
Yeah. And so it took a while to like convince him to like let me go. And the first time he let me go to a show, I was like 14, 15, and it was A Day to Remember. And I was allowed to go because I had gotten surgery on my knee in high school. And my dad was like, you can have whatever you want, because I was terrified of surgery. And I I remember like getting my shots, like go to sleep. And I was like, I want to see A Day to Remember. And my dad was like, okay.
Did he go with you?
No, he didn't. He and my older brother like fought on who was going to take me. And then my dad was just like, I'm the adult. You're taking your sister. So my
nice.
So my older brother, like right after school, he drove. So he drove us home and I was like scarfing down my lunch. And I was like, let's go now. And my brother like, what time does it start? I was like, I don't know, like 7 or 8. And he goes, it's 3 p.m.
Yeah, it's too early. Sound check is going on.
Yeah.
That's so funny. I remember, I think it was back in 2001, I saw Newfound Glory, Finch, and Further Seems Forever. And I wasn't old enough to drive. And it was down in Worcester, Mass. It was like 2 hours away. So my dad came with, and he had a ticket. So Further Seems Forever opened. He liked him. Finch comes on, and he's like, I'm going to go wait in the car. I'm like, you know it's like 3 more hours of this. Yeah, yeah, it's fine. I'm going to wait in the car. It wasn't for him. It's not for everyone.
That's how my mom was. Like when I was in college and I didn't have like someone to go to a show with me, I would just bring my mom. Like didn't matter what it was. I'd be like, Mom, what are you doing? You're not doing anything. Let's go.
That's awesome.
The venue was like, it was a venue and the opposite side was just like a bar restaurant. So if she didn't like the music, she would just sit at the bar restaurant, just like playing Candy Crush on her phone or whatever.
Yeah, we had a similar feeling when stuff came to Portland, Maine, like we need to go because not everything made it to Portland, Maine when we were in high school. And it's a little better now, you know, save for this last year, it's a little better now. It's become a bigger market for that stuff, especially in the summertime with the weather. But it's like we're kind of off the beaten path. When stuff comes through, we got to make sure we get tickets because we want people to come back. We want them to tell their other band friends that we're cool. Like, come here. Our crowds are great. Come see a show. Come play a show for us.
Yeah, I remember being in high school and like anytime I would see a show or like a band I liked played Fresno, I'd get so hyped when they tweeted about Fresno. I was like, oh my God, other people are going to see this. Everyone's going to know Fresno's not uncool.
Yep.
It's weird. It's almost like a scarcity to like the shows that come to like secondary markets where you're like a fan of so much music based on the fact that you just take what you can get. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right. It's kind of cool. You know, like now, like on the Potty of Sleep podcast, like we love everything, but I think it must have a direct correlation with that. It's just like, oh, well, I'll see whatever comes around at this point.
Yeah, that's how it was when I was younger, because like we'd get like one or two shows, like interesting shows a month. Whereas in LA, it's like I got to see like 5 shows a week, and some nights would have like double shows. Like I never had that in Fresno.
Yeah, you were probably like, I can't go to all of these. There's three tonight.
What,
like,
what do you mean there are two separate tours in town?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, that might have happened like once, and I found a way to go to both.
Yeah, right. It did not happen very often for us.
So you're kind of finding the music thing on your own with, you know, going to shows and, you know, the MP3 player and whatnot. On the creative side, was there like a turning point where you're like, you know what? I love this. Like, I think this is my lane. Because you could do anything. I mean, you could be anything when you grow up. You know what I mean? But was there a turning point where you're like, you know what? This is my thing. And maybe even could I parlay it with music somehow? Was there a turning point?
Probably when I graduated high school. So my high school had like a law magnet. And because my dad was an attorney when I was a kid, I was like, I want to go into law. I was like, this is for me. Because like I was in elementary school, he was studying for the bar, and I would like beg him to like let me take practice tests with him. Like I was just reading statutes for fun.
Wow.
So when my high school turned into like a law magnet, I was like, oh yeah, I'm gonna do this. And then did fine in it. And then when I graduated, I was like, yeah, I don't want to go into law anymore. I think I'm gonna go into graphic design because I just really love art.
So what was your first job in music then? Was it doing photography, or were you doing the graphic design thing?
No, I was doing graphic design and illustration. When I was in college, that's kind of when I got more serious about illustrating, and like I learned how to turn my illustrations like into digital things. And when I would go to shows, I'd be like, hey, do you need merch? Do you need designs or anything? And just kind of started from there. Nice. So I think my first actual job was, I would do this thing where I would just submit designs to bands, whether or not they would take them. I would just make them.
I love that. That's awesome.
And I would just like tweet them out. And eventually like people started like being able to recognize, oh, like she does art. And I think it was Knuckle Puck who emailed me, and they were like, will you sell us this design? And I was yeah, absolutely. And it became like their tour flyer, and they made a flag out of it. And I was like, oh my God, this is the coolest thing in the world.
So that was like a pivotal moment. That was like whoa, holy cow. Like this is,
I was like, I can't believe this.
That's wild.
Sweet. We just had a guest on last week, a band, and the bassist scouted someone from an artist from Indonesia, and like really like adored his artwork or her artwork, I can't remember. And they got in contact, and they were like, yeah, let's work together. You know, so it was almost like a reverse situation from yours. Like they reached out
That's
to
so
him.
Sick.
But it's just cool that like everyone, like, you know, if you put it out there, like someone's going to notice, which is neat.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know how to do anything. It was very like fake it till you make it.
Yeah.
Type thing. Like somebody asked me, they were like, oh, do you design merch? I was like, yeah, I design merch. And like, I'd literally never designed actual merch before. I just knew how to draw. And they'd be like, yeah, you need to make this like three colors. And can you half tone this? And I'm like frantically Googling, what does that mean?
Well, that's the thing. In this day and age, like anyone can whip up a fancy, flashy website. You know what I mean? You could look legit before you actually were legit.
Oh, yeah.
Stop spilling our secrets, Twan.
I used to make little buttons, and I like painted a Millhouse on there, and I would like put my website on the side of it. And whenever like people came through for shows, I would just give them buttons, just be like, hey, just kind of like introduce myself and be like, if you ever need art for anything,
that's smart.
Here I am in lovely Fresno, California.
Just getting out there, showing everybody what you can do, and doing it in a bunch of different platforms, like you said, online, and with the way the world is today, so much easier to like find people that way. But getting out and being face to face with somebody, like that's got to be, they can see you. And then, oh, wow, you made this. All right, cool. Put two and two together. And that's somebody I want to touch base with down the road, because this is awesome.
I used to email people like right after they would post tour flyers and be like, hey, do you have any designs yet? I can do something for you if you want. It worked a couple times. So I can't complain.
That's sweet. I mean, like our internal like memo is shoot or shoot. Like you got to try, right? Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Worst they're going to say is no, or just hope, you know, a lot of times just not answer, but that's fine too.
I was
whatever.
Say,
you know?
Not answer.
Yeah, the ghosts are out there. It is what it is.
Yeah, it's a nice way of saying
yeah,
no,
you got to manifest anything.
Exactly.
At this point, I truly believe that like anything can happen.
Yes, totally agree.
100%.
Totally.
Like right now, I'm straight up dead serious. I want them to put me in like the Fast and Furious 10 movie because I think I deserve it. Yeah. So I'm going to try and make this happen.
Can we help somehow?
I do. We can promote it. Working on the movie.
I'll cut when I would cut the trailer for this. I'll just be like, hey, Kat's ready to be in Fast and Furious 10. Like, here it is. Let's go.
Kat, we're going to be best friends because these guys laugh at me all the time. But it's like a nice, laugh, like a friend laugh. But like, I'm a dreamer. Like, yeah. I throw out things like, man, this would be cool to, you know, do this insane thing, like travel to Australia and do an interview with like AC/DC or something crazy. You know what I mean? Like, that would never happen. But I'm like, no, I think it's in the realm of possibility. But it kind of goes back to what you were saying with fake it till you make it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. And I think like we've all kind of had instances of that. Is that kind of the leading up to landing the gig at Pure Noise, was through the artwork and then right into that? Or?
Yeah, I actually interned at Hopeless Records for a summer.
Nice.
Like my last summer before my senior year in college. I'd never had an internship before. I was just reaching out to people to hire me, basically. That was my entire portfolio. Like, yeah, I made these things and these bands said, yes, we'll hire you. And once that internship ended, I just kind of hit up Pure Noise and I was like, hey, can I intern for you? And at first it was just so that I could have experience. Literally the only experience I had was just hitting up bands. And they kind of realized they didn't have like an in-house person to do like design. I didn't do video at the time. And they were like, can you learn video? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. Like, I'll learn whatever. And I got super lucky. And when I graduated, I started up Pure Noise like two weeks later.
So like, what's a typical day? Because I know you kind of do everything, right? Photography, illustration, graphic design, video, which I didn't know. So like, what's a typical day?
Usually, so every week, everybody just kind of emails me what they need for like a single release or like an album release. It's my job to kind of make all the marketing assets. So like, if you see an Instagram ad of like merch or for somebody's album coming out, like I made that. For illustration wise, if somebody needs like album or like single artwork or whatever, and the artist doesn't have somebody else in mind to make it, usually I can just do it in-house. I make all of our like YouTube videos. I run our TikTok now. So I'm like trying to connect with the kids and just kind of figuring out how to like grow our brand more.
Which is kind of crazy, like, to even think about. Like, I mean, I think about like similar labels, you know, or labels that are similar. It's like 20 years ago, like it wasn't a thing. You know what I mean? Like, whether the technology didn't exist or it was bootstrapped or no one had the blueprint. So it's so amazing to me how far it's come for an indie label, especially Pure Noise.
Yeah, there's only seven of us that work in the office.
Oh, wow.
Or like at Pure Noise. So we kind of all have our own roles. And you just need to constantly keep up with what's happening around you. So like with socials and stuff, you kind of have to focus in on like all of the trends and what's happening and what would be cool.
Yeah. And you're probably, yeah, you're looking at everything, right? It's not just the label is so diverse. It's not just one trend you're looking at. You're trying to kind of keep your finger on the pulse of the entire internet as far as that goes. Yeah. Now, which is wild, especially with only seven of you in the office. Like, that's got to be a tall order. I know with what we do, and I'm constantly on our Twitter trying to find a way to stand out. It's hard. It's not an easy job.
Yeah. Thankfully, I'm kind of lucky because I'm just obnoxiously online. Nice. All the time. So I kind of am able to oversee what's happening. And people send me like random stuff all the time. They're like, have you seen this? And I'm like, no. And then I'll just go down a hole of researching the thing.
It's like pure nerdery wormhole, Wikipedia, Google search. Yeah, I can relate with that pretty much. Yeah, late night.
You can.
Midnight.
Yeah, especially when you can't sleep. Like, you open up your phone and suddenly you're like Googling why, you know, trains don't have brakes.
Yeah.
And Nate's on the West Coast. So Tony and I are on the East Coast. So it's like, yeah. Nate was up till 4 a.m. And then I'm like, oh, it was only one. It was only one.
Yeah. Tone answered him at 1:30. What is he doing?
What's he doing?
I'm always surprised by that. Yeah.
Yeah. Occasionally I'm still up doing the same thing. So as far as as we've mentioned, the diversity of the acts on the label, you must kind of know what one band is looking for versus another when it comes to any sort of branding. But that's, I mean, you're doing a bunch of different things there too. So that's got to kind of be daunting as well.
Yeah, because we work with so many different bands, each band kind of has their own like style and theme. So that like helps play into how I make somebody's assets. I like to pull a lot from like album artwork and like the colors they use for everything on that to kind of create just a palette of how to create everything. So like State Champs, like, you know, like bright colors, whereas Terror, black and white. So it definitely keeps you on your toes.
This kind of feeds into the TikTok. Like, we're in like the short attention span generation. Like, I know I'm guilty of this. I can make a decision if I'm going to like a band in 10 seconds, whether it's their name, whether it's the branding, whether it's, you know, obviously the sound and whatnot. But like, does that play into how you approach things? Because like, you know, the visuals are like, at least for me, it's so important. Like, there's album artwork that I'm like, what's going on there? Maybe I won't like that. Or there's something, and maybe a band I've never heard of, where I'm like, that album artwork just draws me in. Does that play into it?
Absolutely. I'm kind of the same way, where if I see somebody has like really cool album artwork, I'm like, there's no way that this album is bad. Like,
totally.
Absolutely. Like, straight up, that's how I started listening to Baroness.
Oh, yeah.
I thought they had the coolest album artwork. And I was like, there's no way that this is bad. And lo and behold, they're a great band.
Yeah. I don't think there's anything wrong with, you know, judging a band by its cover, because it's usually pretty damn good if the album artwork's fire. And if it's not, like, the album artwork's still pretty rad, so just get the poster. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I had a question. We're all like huge music nerds here, but we all have our professional life too. So we're always on a tight, rigid schedule for whatever project we're working on independently. Does that play a big part in how you're timing, you know, album artwork, rollouts, stuff like that?
Yeah, absolutely. So they'll usually, everybody else kind of plans out the business side and like timelines on everything. And then they kind of share that with me on when I need to get assets to everyone. So like, okay, let's say they'll email me different things on a Monday. Sometimes they'll be like, oh, well, we need this by like next week, because so-and-so band is releasing something next Thursday. Sometimes you'll have things like, hey, we need this by end of day. This band is last minute premiering with whatever magazine.
I was going to say, it must be stressful, but it actually just brought me to another question based on tours. So you're kind of getting a little heads up on tour announcements before they drop.
Yeah, I've been hearing of touring.
Nice.
Coming back. I hope it happens.
Yeah.
I'm laughing.
I think I love.
I'm laughing because Nate's fishing. He wants you to drop something.
I will let you know that I'm always the last person to find out tour announcements and stuff. Because usually, yeah. So with the video, I make tour teasers. So I'll usually find out about tours right before they're announced. Because somebody's got to send me all the dates and the bands and be like, please make us a video. And I'll be like, okay.
So Kat, we had Frank Maddox on the podcast. He did a lot of the Deftones artwork. He did the recent Higher Power album. Actually, he's done the Used. I think he's done a couple of Used albums too. And one thing I was curious in that conversation with him is like, he did the Deftones White Pony album, and like that iconic pony, the pony, and that has extrapolated to tattoos, to tour backdrops. It's like so iconic. So I'm just curious, like, now that like literally anything can be merch, like I have an incendiary coffee mug on my counter here. Like, does that play into like, all right, this needs to work not only for the tour, it's got to work for merch, it's got to work for the CD. Does that play into kind of your creative thought process?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Branding, especially with kind of like giving bands their own like little like symbols or whatever. Cause like you said, you can take that and you can put it on anything.
Yeah, it's such a huge part of it. Like merch, I mean, really keeps bands afloat. Like that's, I forget who we had on, but someone was like, we're a t-shirt company that plays music. It was Toby from Sparks the Rescue. They were on Fearless Records.
I used to love that band.
Yeah.
Nice.
That's so sick.
We're a t-shirt company that also plays music. And I'm like, you know what? He probably isn't wrong. Like, that's how they kept afloat.
So I kind of collect movie promos, just like from old movies, just like random stuff. So like, not a bit, Con Air is one of my favorite movies.
Oh, so good.
Like in my living room, I have a massive like 3-foot poster. Like, I love Con Air. So sometimes when I like watch movies, I'm like, oh, I wonder what promo items they made for this. Cause that kind of also has me thinking about like merch and stuff. It's like, okay, let's look up a movie and see, you know, what they created for it. Con Air, they made little you know those like airplane pins that they give little kids?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of what they did for Con Air.
Do you have one?
I do not.
Oh.
One day.
We're going to find one of those. Yeah, we're going to find
day.
One of those. Con Air, great movie.
I do have an embroidered Con Air crew neck, though.
Nice.
Wow, that exists. I learned something today.
You'll be, yeah, honestly, it's a bad habit I think I picked up mostly during the pandemic, where I'll just be watching an old movie and I'm just like, oh, I wonder what promo items they have. Mm-hmm. Like The Wedding Singer, they made one of those like toy microphones where that like weirdly echoes.
Oh, yeah.
That kind of plays into what you do every day, though, so that makes sense. I mean, you're looking at, okay, how did they market this? I wonder how it was done then versus today, maybe be different. That would, I mean, that's a different kind of nerdery, and that's the word that we use to explain all of this is I want to know things about that because it piques my interest and it's stuff I love, whether it be music or movies or anything like that, books.
Yeah, I always like to think of what's an insane thing that we could make.
So what is the most
insane thing? Because I think a lot of people
are
afraid. We made... story so far viewfinders.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I remember that.
Because I literally just made a post about it, so that's why I'm thinking about it. But we made viewfinders because they shoot a lot of film, and for their last record, everything was kind of like psychedelic, like prism based stuff. And I was like, you know, it'd be really cool, a viewfinder.
So that was your brainchild.
It was. I think it was a collab. Because sometimes we just sit there and we're just like, I wonder what would be cool. Or sometimes I'll see something really cool and I'm like, you know, it would be really cool is if we just take this idea.
I've had that same sentiment. I went to Aquabats concert and they had a merchandise. It was a Aquabats coloring book. I'm like, that's friggin' rad.
That's like, so sick.
That's a one-off. You know what I mean? I wish I bought it because ever since I was like, that's like the coolest idea ever.
Yeah, I love collecting like toys and knickknacks. I'm just like, if I see something small and cool, I'm like, oh, I need this. Or if I watch something, I'm like, oh, I need to own something of this.
When it's done awesome, it works. But even when it's not done well, like it's not hanging up, but I have a Kill Switch Engage light switch cover. And I'm like, it's a cool idea, but who's going to actually use this?
Surprised it's not up in your basement right now.
It might be.
That's honestly that's so smart.
Yeah,
that works so well.
Turn it off, right? It does work.
Yeah,
and
kill switch
someone
off.
Had to come up with that. Yeah, somebody had to come up with that, and that's what you do. And that's it's a different. I've always thought of myself as not really super creative. I think with doing this, I've become a little more creative, but it always blows me away some of the stuff people come up with because I'm just like, how did you do that? It's not a piece of my head that works right.
Sometimes I'll just like text my bosses at like midnight or whatever. I'm like, hey, you know what would be really cool? What if we did this?
Any bizarre ones that you want to mention?
Well, I'm on my laptop right now and I have my work computer behind me. And one of my tabs is a Gundam kit. So stay tuned.
Nice.
We'll keep our eyes peeled. So you've done, you know, tour posters, you've done logos. Is there anything that like you see out in the wild, like whether it's on a CD cover or, you know, promo stuff that you've done that you're like, damn, like that's me. And all these people are seeing it and it's on a t-shirt. Like, is that?
Oh, it's crazy every single time. So like I'll go to shows and like there'll be instances where there's multiple kids wearing like different merch that I made. And it's crazy every single time. And sometimes kids will come up to me at shows. Like I remember at one show, this kid showed me his like phone background and it was like an illustration I made. I was like, I'm sorry, what? I was like, that's crazy. One kid, or like some kids will get tattoos of things that I illustrated, and I'm like, this is nuts.
That's next level, right? When someone puts it on ink on their body for the rest of their life. That's
and it's always like, you know, this is permanent. Like you can't change your mind.
Right.
What would we recognize that you've done that you're like super proud of?
I did a lot of the early like Knuckle Puck merch.
Nice.
I've done a couple flags for Real Friends. Usually if you've seen anything that has flowers on it from like 2016 to 2015 to 2017, chances are I've made it.
Nice. So obviously the last year has been difficult as far as rolling out, whether it be touring or new music for bands. I'm sure a lot of stuff was probably ready to go in March of last year and it kind of, you put the stop on it. There's got to be some stuff where you from then that you're getting ready to hopefully roll out here if shows come back.
Yeah, a lot of stuff got pushed back from last year. I don't know how many records we came out with last year, but it was significantly less than the year before.
Yeah, my bad.
And that was just kind of weird to, I guess, go through. It's like you're not used to not going to, you know, multiple shows a week for like having, you know, live sets to edit or tour teasers to make. And I think in the beginning it was really weird because like we didn't know how long this was going to last. We're like, oh, maybe it's just going to be like a couple weeks, and then like it turns into like a month, and then a couple months, and then here we are a year later.
Yeah, you're totally right. It changes even for on the fan level. Like it changed my whole scheduling for sometimes months out. Like, oh, okay, I know I'm going to be in LA in this time period, so I can look for shows around then. I always joke with these guys, like I'll route my work around certain tours and so forth. So I'm like, oh, I don't have to do that. So my calendar is just like empty, except for like basic stuff, like get groceries or something. I'm like, oh man, missed the
yeah,
old days.
It's really weird. I work with, I have to have like a physical calendar that I, like a planner that I write in.
Yep.
And it's, you know, every like December, January, I get so excited because I'm like, cool, I get to buy a new planner this year. My planner last year, I honestly considered just kind of like emailing the company and just being like, hey, I bought this planner, but I didn't get to use it. Can I just have a different one for 2021? Because it's weird looking at your schedule, because like I would always write shows in my planner, and like spring and fall would be filled like every other night, or like if not every night, there was a show to complete blankness.
It's so sad.
Yeah. It bummed me out.
Well, the worst was when the pandemic like first kicked off, and it was like it was so severe at the time that me and my wife just started going through our phone and just deleting shows out of our phone to where there was nothing left. And it was like, this is the weirdest thing, because this is, I mean, in theory, it's thousands of dollars. But with all the stuff you had lined up in terms of, you know, merch or just overall tour rollouts, is that stuff still valid for when things go back online? Or are you going to have to kind of start over based on, I don't know, the theme of the music now? Or
we'll probably have to start over.
Yeah. Yeah. I figured.
We'll see.
Fresh start. Yeah.
Or tweak it at least, right? I mean, sure, some of it still works, but some of it's like, no, things have changed. Yeah. Let's do this.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see how touring will be when it does come back.
Yep.
Because like right now, everyone I think is just announcing like festivals, and all the tours are for like 2022.
Yeah. Yeah. I know, it's kind of like 9/11, like the connotation will change the dynamic of releases. Like Jimmy Eat World, Bleed American, 9/11 happens, they scrap the name. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You know, it's just not applicable anymore because of what's going on. So like pandemic, like, I can imagine like a band like Airborne Toxic Event. It's probably like, we should probably change our name.
Yeah, that's rough. I'm down with the sickness by Disturbed.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So Kat, you sound like you have a pretty diverse interest in music and whatnot. And obviously, like we said, I mean, Pure Noise is all over the map. And it fits like, I mean, I love the Spill Canvas as much as I love Terror.
Love the Spill Canvas so much.
I listened to One Fell Swoop. It was way up there in my Spotify spins last year. It kind of fit the mood. It kind of fit the mood of the whole year.
What I love most about working at Pure Noise is I sometimes will get like a full circle moment. And like Spill Canvas was honestly like a full circle moment for me, just because when I was in like seventh grade, you know, it was cool to have like lyrics and stuff on your binders. Like I straight up had, I don't know why anyone didn't check up on me, but like I had the lyrics like Self-Conclusion just like on my Spanish binder.
Great song. I love
Spill Canvas.
My daughter's name is Natalie, and like I'm wondering if it's like subconsciously because of them, but it's, I didn't think of it when we named her that, but yeah, you kind of answered my question, which is like it must keep things fresh. Like you, it's a label that like you genuinely probably don't know who you guys are going to sign next, because like, you know, certain labels like Bridge Nine, you know what's coming for the most part. Trustkill back in the day, you kind of knew. Victory, you never knew, but it also didn't work. So, but like, it must be awesome from your perspective.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I straight up never know what the next band is going to sound like. It's like, they could be a hardcore band, they could be a pop punk band, they could be an indie band, who knows?
But it works. Like that's the, and I go back to the branding and just like, it's kind of a family. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, and it keeps you from having to be stuck in one lane too. And that's got to be fun as an artist, is I don't know what I'm going to get for music. So I don't know what we're going to get for visuals. It could be anything.
Yeah. Honestly, I love the diversity, because I mean, that's how like my normal music goes. Like I'll listen to whatever, like I'll go from Hatebreed to Hannah Montana.
Yep. I like that. Hate Breed to Hannah Montana. That might be the name of the episode.
That's perfect.
So I'm going to tangent. In college, my buddies and I had a attempted to do a little acoustic project, and we called ourselves The Home Show. And on Pure Volume, our influences were from Hanson to Hatebreed. True story.
Wow. I love that.
That's so good.
Which is true.
We need one for the podcast. From AC/DC to Avril Lavigne.
Those are two A's. We need a Z in there.
Oh, sure.
Zebrahead. Hey, perfect.
Yeah, exactly.
So it sounds like you kind of are, because just listening to the whole conversation here, but you guys are very DIY. There's 70 in there. You're doing a lot of it yourself, and that must be kind of rewarding, though.
It honestly is. It's straight DIY or die. There isn't like a corporation or something that we have to go through. If we want to do something, we'll just kind of do it.
I love that.
Yeah, that's awesome. We're kind of like rolling with that, I think by fault with the podcast, but Ever since I moved to California, I've been part of many DIY projects. So maybe there's an energy in California that kind of do DIY, but we all love that. You know, that's pure nerdery. You know, that's what we talk about. Just music appreciation.
Hey man, we're from Maine. You're from Maine too. And we're DIY too. So, hey, it's not just a California thing.
No, I know.
It's a coast thing. Right? Yeah. Sorry, the Midwest. We have a couple quick hitters, some lightning round-ish questions, kind of one-word-ish answers if you're up for that.
Okay.
You can go more than one word. You can go...
Yeah, they don't have to be one word.
Okay. You'll have to... You'll have to edit out all my...
Nah, you'll be fine. So, all-time favorite band right now, because that probably changes.
Jimmy Eat World.
So, tangent, we'll probably do a Jimmy Eat World episode at some point, and you have an open invite.
Yes.
Please. One time, I'm going to tell you... Another tangent, I'm going to tell you a story. I got to design for Jimmy Eat World one time.
No way.
Wow.
Simply because I tweeted at them when I was in college. I was like, hey, I was in a screen printing class and I did my final, like, I just did like a sweetness illustration on, it was like lithograph or something. And I just tweeted at them. I was just like, hey,
that's awesome.
Can we design together? And they were like, oh, this is really cool. And then one day, they actually hit me up and I was like, oh my God, no way. They're like, yeah, if you have any designs or anything, just like send them our way. Like, we love what you do. And I was just like, oh,
that's amazing.
Okay. I was nervous about it. Yeah. I ghosted them.
No.
Yes. Because I was terrified of sending them a design and them hating it.
Oh, I can understand that. Especially that young, right?
Yeah. I was like, I can't do this. But I eventually... I think a couple months after that, I saw them play a show and I like just met up with their drummer just so that we could like introduce ourselves. And he was just like, yeah, we love your work. Like, we know you're busy, but like, if you can like find some time. And I was like, oh my God, my favorite band is asking me to pencil them in.
That's an oh shit moment.
That is wild.
I was like, oh my God, trying to explain that to my mom. And she's just like, okay, cool.
Well, we're all floored by it. That's pretty awesome.
I know. That's massive.
We love tangents too. So thank you for that.
Oh, I love tangents.
That's all we do here.
That's half of what our episodes are.
Yeah, pretty much. Loose ideas, tangent.
Yeah.
So, Kat, I listened to your episodes on Sound of Change podcast and the What's in Your Ear podcast. So I know you're a big Every Time I Die fan.
I don't know if you can see it in my Zoom, but this wall is just Every Time I Die.
Nice.
So I got to know, what do you think of the three new songs, AWOL, Desperate Pleasures, Colossal Wreck?
It's going to be album of the year whenever they release it.
I think it is.
It's so good. It's unreal good.
I listened to those three songs walking my dog tonight in the neighborhood. And I'm like, I wish everyone could listen to what I'm listening to right now. But I think Desperate Pleasures gets the nod out of those three. It's just like...
Absolutely same. It's so good.
It's so good.
It's crazy. It feels like Every Time I Die is like kind of in a competition with themselves to see if they can just, you know, beat whatever their last great record was.
It's crazy.
They do that every single record. It's insane.
Yeah. The longevity's nuts. Like, they're the only one left from like that original Hellfest, that transition to Ozfest band level. Like, they're the only ones left and they're just getting better with age. It's crazy. There's very few bands like that, and I'm super stoked for that album. So I was curious. I love that new stuff, the three new songs.
I think it's great. That artwork is phenomenal. It's amazing. Straight up, every time I die is on a, like, they're on their own level.
Yeah, the artwork is fantastic. I actually referenced that artwork. There was something that, I think it was when we were chatting about Daft Punk, and I was like, you know what, that reminds me of the new Every Time I Die visuals.
That sounds like something we would do.
Yeah, that transition. Yeah,
yeah,
totally.
Jordan Buckley, also one of my favorite illustrators.
Yeah, he's crazy talented. Like, it just, that stuff must take him days and days and days to do.
Oh, yeah. If you follow him on, like, Instagram, every time, like, he would do posters or whatever, he would just, like, update his progress on it, and it just weeks. It's just hours, like, doing, like, little hairs, little lines, and you're just like, this is insane.
I got one, Kat, kind of reeling back to the whole live thing, because I'm obsessed with just whenever that day comes to, like, see live music again, because I'm itching, like, the calendar's empty. What are you most excited to see when things come back full, open, you get to see a concert? Like, who are you most excited to see, whether they're
every
on Pure Noise or... Yeah,
every right time on. I die. Literally sense. Every nice. Time I die. Yep. I would say every time I die, Fiddlehead and Jimmy Eat World.
Yep. Awesome.
Hey, they could tour together, like, at least the first two.
If they ever toured together, I think my head would explode. Absolutely. Like, I wouldn't know how to act.
You know what you do is what I say to these guys. It's like, all right, cool. We're going to follow the tour.
Someday, Nate, we'll be able to do that.
Yeah.
You just can't get enough of that live music.
No,
I can't. Nope.
No, it's, well, I'm almost, geez, what's, it's April. So it's been a year and like 7 months since I've been to a show.
What was the last show you saw?
Incubus in Portland at, for the Make Yourself 20 year anniversary tour.
Wow.
They did. Yeah. Which was why it was an awesome show. It was, we had a blast. Tuan, you were there. It was a tiny little venue we grew up in that we loved. And they came through, and it's not a bad place to watch the show from that venue. So it was pretty cool. But that was October of 19. So it's been a little bit of time.
Kat, did you go to LDB Fest?
I did not. I was supposed to. I was like prepared to go, and then I had to buy a car.
Oh, nice.
Because my car said, haha, I'm not going to work anymore.
Oh,
priorities. Yeah. That was my last show.
Yeah.
That was my, I flew down by myself, and I don't think I talked with anyone the whole weekend. I was just like in my own world, but it was awesome. I would go back again. I would definitely recommend it.
My last show was, it was a double show at Chain Reaction. It was literally the day before everything shut down, and it was just running out Acacia Strain in Chamber. And the only way they could keep the show going was if they split it. So like the first show started at like 2:30.
Oh, wow.
Second show was at like 7.
I love Chain.
And then the next day it was legal to hang out with your friends.
Yeah, right. We'll get back to it though. It's gonna happen again. I'm hoping at least outdoors late summer, early fall for us anyway.
I just saw like a country fest that got announced in like July or something.
Yeah, yeah. We've seen that. I mean, Corey Taylor's playing shows in late May in Texas and like Arizona, which is wild.
Wow.
Yeah. They're outside. They're like in parking lots, but they're doing it, which is hopefully that, I mean, they're people in their pods and better than nothing. I mean, if it came through where we are, I would certainly consider it with people that I've been around.
I just bought tickets. I have a screenshot I sent these guys out of a concert in mid-August.
Yep.
For my first show back in, like, I think you said, Tones, around the same time frame, more than a year and a half. I'm like, if this happens, awesome. I'm not expecting it to go through, but if it does go through, like, it's my guarantee. So
yeah, you got the tickets.
I got the tickets. Yep.
We got one more or a couple more?
Yeah, go ahead.
What is your favorite Pure Noise album?
My favorite Pure Noise album.
And if they're like kids and you can't pick one, you can pick a few and we won't tell anyone.
Well, we'll tell everybody, but yeah.
Yeah, only us. You'll have to like bleep out this entire part so no one else gets it.
Sorry, guys.
My favorite Pure Noise album. There's so many good ones.
It's tough. Like, I have the roster pulled up. It's tough.
Absolutely love everything that 4 Year Strong does.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I go to Warp, I'm like, yeah, 4 Year Strong, best band on Warp Tour. So sick. The last Seaway album is so, it reminds me of The Outfield, and I love The Outfield.
Nice.
Wow. You can't see it, but I have an Outfield gold record of play deep.
No way.
After we finish up, I'll show it to you.
That's
pulling
so sick.
Yep.
And it was issued to Anthony out of Fandom.
Yeah, right. I think it came out the year I was born. Actually, it did. It definitely did. So,
but The Outfield are awesome. So that makes sense. And I've listened to that Seaway record. You're right. That Seaway record is good.
Yeah, I love Seaway. Can't stop listening to that record. I'm going to also pull up our there's so much good music. It's kind of crazy.
If it makes you feel better, I'm the most indecisive person on planet Earth. So I have to like start grouping these into like, well, it depends. Like favorite album by Pure Noise in what category? Like how can we define
There's so many different categories.
What mood are you in, right? I mean, it depends on what you how you're feeling that day too.
What day of the week is it? Yeah.
The Sea Haven record, amazing. I was so excited when that came out.
I'll have to check it
out. I texted work and I was like, hey guys, can I, because I saw it in our Dropbox and I was like, hey guys, can I, am I allowed to listen to this? And they were like, yeah, go ahead. And I was like, cool, thanks. Nice.
Perks of the job right there.
And I wasn't allowed to tell anyone about it. And I'm very proud of myself that I kept that secret to myself.
That actually just popped a question in my head. Best fringe benefit of working at Pure Noise.
Fringe that you can benefit? Talk about. That you can talk about, yeah.
That you can talk about.
Perks of the job.
Perks of the job, yeah. Seems like there's like everything you said tonight pretty much, but.
There's so many perks. Sometimes I can weasel my way into shows.
Yeah,
nice.
Like bigger, not like scene, but like actual massive production. I remember my best friend and I tried to get tickets to see DaBaby because I love DaBaby. His show was sold out, and I was like, I'm so sorry, like I can't get us tickets. And I was like, wait. And I think it took like a week, but eventually, I was able to get in to see DaBaby.
That's awesome.
I don't ever use that often, but sometimes I need to.
Every now and then you got to do it. I mean, that's it's all in the name of getting out there and seeing music.
I had to see live music. And I think that was like an insane like show week too. Mm-hmm. Like I saw DaBaby one night. I think that was the week of My Chemical Romance too.
Oh wow.
Like their reunion?
Oh, at the Forum.
It was at the Shrine.
Oh, wow. Yep. Shrine. Nice.
Was at the Shrine. Went to like For the Children. So like Gulch played, Disembodied played.
Nice.
And then like the Movement's holiday show.
Nice.
That's I was it. Like, live music is for me.
Yes.
Hell yeah. And that just brought me to another question. Just a tangent on the tangent. favorite venue. I was going to say in California. Maybe just favorite music venue in general that you've been to.
I'm a huge fan of the Hi-Hat in Highland Park because it's
nice. Just,
it's small,
yep.
And Burger Lords used to be in it.
Mm-hmm.
Saw Cold World there for the first time. And then I have a soft spot for Strummers in Fresno. It's only like a 400 cap venue, but.
Those are the best. We love
those. Yeah, I honestly thought, I used to think that was like a pretty big venue because I never really traveled for shows. And then I would like come to LA and people would be like, yeah, it's just a small show tonight. It's like 850 cap. And I was like, huh? What do you mean a small show?
Oh man, so many good venues in LA. And I've never been to Hi-Hat, but I was in LA once for something other than, I was there for another concert. And I was there early because I like to go to LA. I live in San Diego, go to LA, get food, then go to the show. And I remember looking on my phone. I was with my wife, like, sweet, we're going to see the show tonight at the Disney Arena. What's that, like, crazy silver building downtown? Nope, the one that's, like, got the crazy, like, architecture. Walt Disney Hall.
The Walt Disney Hall. Symphony Hall.
Yeah, yeah, amazing venue, by the way. So I was, like, ready to go to a show there, and Rivers Cuomo announces, from Weezer, like, a 1 p.m. concert at Hi-Hat. I couldn't get tickets, but that was, like, the one time that I was trying to get into Hi-Hat, so I got to check out that venue. Little tangent.
It's okay. One time, literally 2 years ago, when that Fall Out Boy, Weezer,
Green Day, yeah.
They announced like a day of show at Whiskey Go Go.
Oh,
and you could only get tickets if you stood in line, and that venue was very far from where I was.
Oh man,
that's yep.
I remember that show announcement. We're on the same pulse. I saw that, and I was like, can't get up there in time. Damn it.
I think that is all of our lightning round questions, unless Nate comes up with another one on the spot.
I could go all night. But...
You could. He really could.
Any
we
lightning
thank
tangents?
Oh well, we've had a few of those too. I mean, that's kind of, we say lightning round and it turns into another half an hour segment. It's just kind of what we do.
I think I counted exactly one. Lightning round.
So we got to work on that, I guess. But thank you for coming on, Kat. We've really, this has been an awesome conversation. Lots of fun.
Oh, I appreciate you guys for having me.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
Appreciate hearing your insights on your time at Pure Noise.
Thanks again. Appreciate it, Kat.
That was our conversation with Kat Nijmegen of Pure Noise Records, creative director. That was a lot of fun. She, man, she's an interesting gal. Lots of fun, different topics going on for her. She's doing a lot of different cool things at the record label. And it was just a blast to hear how that's all going. And like, you'd always wonder, I want to pull back the curtain, an indie label like that, a big indie label like that, how do these things work? And she gave us some great insight to that.
Oh, absolutely. And like, she answered a lot of, like you said, a lot of questions that I have. Like, we all love the branding. Like, I think that's what the branding and identity is, one of the reasons why I love Pure Noise. I love the music, love the branding. And you would think that they're this like massive entity. And to hear that it's just what, 7 or 8 people, whatever it was, it's amazing. Yeah. Like, you have to wear so many hats when that's the case. And it doesn't come across like that. It's a cohesive brand and identity that I just love. Like, I remember my boss's boss telling me to check out this band Moontooth like 2 or 3 years ago. He's like, check out Moontooth. I know your style of music. You'll like them. And then like, I never did, or I did maybe once or twice. And then 6 months later, Pure Noise signs them. And I'm like, oh shit. Like they're certified now. You know what I mean? Like I slept on them, but like, that's what Pure Noise does. Like if they sign a band, I'm going to check it out.
Yeah, I'm right with you. And also, you know, just a tangent on a tangent is like, I think we've all collectively talked about, whether on air or off, like, you know, what if we had gone this route? Like, we're such nerds. We've made a podcast based on music appreciation. Like, what if we had gone Kat's route and made a career out of it? And I'm always like wondering, like, man, I just made a few turns where I was kind of going in that direction and I kind of pivoted left instead. And I always wonder, and hearing her backstory, and it might even be a little cliche, like, we got to ask, like, you know, what made you go in that direction? Because there's so many variables as to, you know, why and when and how. And she was going to law school, right? So, I mean, her concentration was completely different. And she finished the degree and everything. And she's like, I'm actually not going to do that. And that's like my favorite kind of story. Like, we were talking about deep dives on, like, you know, eBay, but also like a YouTube or whatever. But for me, like Wikipedia, like you look at so many people, like they had this whole thing planned out. And then they were like, you know what? I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do this instead. And like the coolest stories come out of that. And I think Kat kind of highlighted that, you know, trajectory. Like, oh, I was going this direction, went this, and now she's with Pure Noise and has, you know, some great stories to tell, but really it's some really interesting insights on what it's like at Pure Noise.
Well, and to be able to turn a passion into a career is always fascinated. Yeah. I think all three of us to do something that you're really into. You know, she taught herself how to draw. She became a fan of music and you know, had one of those old, not iPods, but like iPod knockoff type things full of music that she wanted to listen to because that was the only way she could do it. And then to kind of merge the two and turn into the career that she has now. And to be passionate about it on top of that is just, it's the best of all worlds. I would imagine that's pretty cool. I love doing this with you guys. I can't imagine being paid to do this too. So, you know what I mean? Like I'd take that in a heartbeat. So for her to be able to do that and then give us, you know, this is what it's like at a record label like Pure Noise, which we all are fans of and love a bunch of different bands on their roster. There's something for everybody. If you haven't checked anybody out, go check it out. There's that you will find something on that label that you like. To hear like the behind the scenes stuff there is, it's cool. It's exactly what I want to hear. It's exactly what I want to know. It's those behind the scenes people that are doing the things that allow us to see that cool poster, see that awesome t-shirt, or check out the video for this band that we love. That's the stuff I want to know about.
Yeah, you nailed it. It's the, for her, it's the fusion of really two passions, which most people don't even get to harness one passion for their career. So it's really cool. I, you know, envious in a lot of ways. And you're right, Nate. I mean, you know, life takes you so many different directions. You know, if we went down that path, you know, or told him we went down that path, you know, how would it have been? But so we can live through Kat, I guess is my point. Super generous with her time. And we'd love to have her on for a Jimmy Eat World episode. That'd be a lot of fun. I know we have floated it out there.
She would, yeah, she'd be perfect for that. Being a fan and knowing the catalog, that would be ideal to have her back for something like that. So you never know. You might see her again pop up in our feed.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Kind of continue the conversation. It was kind of going off like after we ended a little bit into a whole different episode on multiple subjects. So,
right.
It's cool that she's also a nerd with us in unison. But yeah, man, I was super stoked to have her on. The whole time we were talking to her, I was like, man, like, this is so cool to live like vicariously through her experience, because like you were saying, Tuan, like, what if we had gone that route? But at the end of the day, it's like a lot of things happen for a reason. She was meant to be in the position she is, you know, full circle. Like, now we can appreciate it because she landed that role and fits it perfectly. And that might be a tight knit group, but I don't think I fit in that realm, you know, as much as I think that I should, or maybe it could have worked out. Like, I think her passion level and skill is above mine. So it always comes down to like best person for the job. Well, she's the best person for the job.
So if you're just checking us out for the first time, we definitely appreciate you checking us out. If you're a longtime listener, hope you enjoyed the episode and, you know, turned you on to some new bands. So we definitely appreciate all our listeners.
Yeah, and shouts to Chip. That email yesterday was awesome. I mean, this is a couple of days out, but we love you, Chip. That was a cool email. It made all of our day. He's a listener. We love Chip.
Yeah, good call. A little special shout out to a very, very special fan that's threw us an email at the podioslavepodcast@gmail.com. And yeah, good call and a little shout out. Love to Chip. Good call, man.
Awesome. So with that, I think we'll probably wrap it up there. And we will see everyone next week.
Here's a song from Seaway, Mrs. David. Peace, podheads.
Cheers, everyone.
See ya. So-called